You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello everybody, welcome back to ESSR's Angel. No, don't adjust your set. This is not another episode of East Meets West. You should be so lucky. This is ESSR Central. This is your stand-in host, Scott McLeod, stepping in for the next couple of weeks. Ross selfishly goes and has a child, you know. He's had to sell his stock in ESSR so he can go away and start a family, which I think is definitely more egregious than anything else he could have done. And I'll be here with a revolving door, of course. You saw David Campbell step in last week. I was supposed to host that, but you know David Campbell, he can't be the co-host to anybody. He has to have complete control of everything he's into, which is why his movie was so great. And joining me for this week to talk AEW, TNA, about WWE ahead of the draft is, as I joked before, my East Meets West co-host, my former partner in the draft, the only person on this podcast I can seemingly rely on a regular basis to step in, who's free on a Wednesday night, is Grant McRobbie.
It's a pleasure to be on my first Central in absolute ages, and this is Ross's own fault. He's the one that decided to become a dad, and now he's left his other baby unattended with us to babysit it. So, Ross, if you didn't like it, tough shit.
Yes, he's left one of his children to be corrupted by the likes of us to go and have another one. So, like you said, he brought this on himself. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Like, David Campbell still joked about how he hadn't been on Central in ages. He hadn't hosted a proper Central, I don't think, since like the very second ever episode. And then he was on last week as the host. You're on for the first time, God knows how long. It's funny how all you people are suddenly coming out of the woodwork and are available, and Ross isn't here as the host. Like when Triple H started bringing people back after the minute Vince was at the door.
That's exactly the vibes that I got with Ross. The only thing he was missing was the dodgy tash.
Oh, there's plenty of things dodgy about Ross, but his tash isn't one of them. Anyway, just let you know before we get going that you can follow Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat on all the good Android podcasts and sites. Give us a like, rating, or review on your platform of choice. And let's see if I can do my best Ross impression. Follow us for interviews, previews, reviews, and all the news wherever you get your podcasts. It's Saturday Draft Live, ESSR Central, and East Meets West, myself and Grant Robbie. Also, the ESSR feature shows every month. We do have a feature show coming out very soon about Bayley. It has been recorded just the other week. This coming week, we're recording a special about the top 10 WWE Intercontinental Champions of all time, our list compiled by the panel, and it'll be discussed and broken down on this podcast, and so much more still to come. And also make sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Suplex Retweet, and make sure you follow our community page, get involved in the conversation, answer the question. Campbell's keep trying to call it Campbell's question, but we will not allow it to be called Campbell's question, and it will still be the big question. Get that read out on an episode of ESSR, and we'll have a question at the end of the show to ask, and will be posted on our social media platforms very soon.
I refuse to call it his question. It is just a question. He's only got any one of us could ask a fucking question. Name it our question.
Most recent question that was posted on the ESSR Facebook page wasn't related to WrestleMania that went down. That was a big talking point on last week's Central, and it was asking, was Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns the greatest main event in WrestleMania history? And some of the answers we had, David Horton saying it's certainly up there purely from a storytelling perspective, definitely some Avengers Endgame vibes with all the involvement from others. Also the celebration at the end, Cody handing the title to Mama Rhodes, that made me shed a few tears. David Campbell himself says, for me, yes, without a shadow of a doubt, that gives a 100% culmination with the greatest wrestling stories ever told. Ryan Reglish, absolutely, so many twists and turns built up to the event and they smashed it out of the park. Anthony Fitzpatrick said it literally had everything. Minor thing, I would have preferred had the glass rate instead of the gong. Well, we've always had a gong or a dong where we didn't want it. But overwhelmingly, the responses seem to be about WrestleMania that it was like the Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns match was, you know, like one of if not the greatest main event of all time. You know, a lot of people would have loved to have Cody win the title last year at WrestleMania. You know, hindsight's 2020. You know, part of me thinks maybe when you consider it all together, maybe it was worth it to go through this, to have this more cathartic moment. Some of you may still have your preferences. I know Gary Kiernan, for all the money he paid to go out to watch WrestleMania 39 live in the stadium, probably would have preferred it still to be last year. But Grant, just your thoughts, because we haven't really talked to you and me a lot about WrestleMania. Your overall thoughts on Mania, and where would you stand on like where this on the Cody and Roman main event in terms of greatest WrestleMania main events of all time?
It was definitely unlike Alan's shite taken taste. Jesus Christ, Grant. unlike Alan's really shit taste in steaks, this is the one time that you can say well done. And yeah, well done on WWE for giving us an absolutely great WrestleMania. 40 was, to me, a resounding success on almost every part, with the only dud to me being the Usos match. They'd done that about 2 months too late. That main event, if you didn't have the storyline build up to it, I don't think it would have been the greatest. But because of the actual long-term story it's taken us to get there, I would be in quite heavy agreement that it is probably the greatest WrestleMania main event they've had.
It's definitely going to be, maybe if you did a Mount Rushmore being a main event, I think it's going to be up there mainly for, you know, the catharsis, like you said, of like in the history of like Roman's reign, you know, one of the longest reigns since you're like your Hogan's, your San Martino's, to be ended, the longest reign of the modern era being conquered. And I was like, yeah, they were going to, I discussed this with Dave Campbell last week, yeah, they were going to pivot at one point quite unwisely to The Rock Roman, but the fact, unlike the previous regime where they saw the sense to go back the way and actually in the process give The Rock one of the greatest heel runs probably of his career in the process, it's something that's probably still got more layers to be peeled back when The Rock comes back from Hollywood to have his next match with Cody Rhodes. It's definitely going to be up there, and hopefully, unlike some other great WrestleMania ones, this one won't be ruined in hindsight if somebody involved does something wrong. But we're not here to talk WWE and wrestling. We did a lot of that last week. We're here to talk AEW Dynasty. It's one of our main topics here. Went down last Sunday in St. Louis, Missouri. I'll quickly go through the pre-show. Not much to say. The first two matches, you had Trent Barretta defeating Matt Sydal and Katsuyori Shibata and Orange Cassidy defeating Shane Taylor Promotions. Two matches that have been described as having happened last weekend and could easily have fitted on your average Rampage or Collision. But the main thing for the pre-show, I'm still annoyed that they put this on the pre-show, you had the winner-take-all unification match, the AEW World Trio Championships and the Ring of Honor Six-Man Tag Team Championships, where you had the Bang Bang Gang, Jay White and the Guns, defeating the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass to unify the titles, with Billy Gunn eventually taking the pin after a Blade Runner from Jay White. Now, Grant, for people who haven't listened to East Meets West, well, first off, shame on you. But initially when Jay White went over to AEW, you and I, you know, we've had our fair share of jokes at Tony Khan's expense, particularly like when we were baffled by the decisions initially for the booking of Jay White. But since then, you know, the act here with Bullet Club Gold now more so referred to just as simply the Bang Bang Gang, especially with the Guns, is one hell of an act. And it's weird, it seems like after this whole the supergroup formed, as the Bullet Club Gold stock's risen, it seems like the claim stock is just drastically going down.
Yeah, the journey of Jay White ever since he's left New Japan has been one of many twists and turns for me, many of them very upsetting, because Tony, this man should have been a world title holder by now in AEW. Jay White has it all in the full package. But what I will give it is, Jay White has teamed with the Guns, who, to me, previously were a very forgettable tag team, who, really, the only thing they had going for them was the Gun name. And he's helped elevate them into proper talent. Am I annoyed that this was in the pre-show? Yes. Am I also annoyed that they decided to go into a unification of the two different trios matches? Abso-fucking-lutely. The fuck are you playing it, Tony? The Ring of Honor trios titles have had a lot of history to them.
Yeah. And, well, to show you just how little Tony Khan really cares about those trios titles, you just have to look back at Supercard of Honor, which in itself was very poorly hyped and poorly advertised. But, like, look, Google did an unadvertised bloody, like, open challenge. Again, and it was answered by Monster, so Alex Zane and Lance Archer and buddy Minoru Suzuki. They didn't even advertise a match appearance by Minoru Suzuki for Supercard of Honor. So I think those belts were kind of obscure anyway. And as much as it was a big moment to be there at Wembley to see, you know, the claims and that win from the House of Black finish that story and, you know, go on this run with the pink belts with the scissored straps, they've done very little with as trio champions, maybe since they got involved in the MJF Devil like feud back in November, October time. So I think it's a bit time to kind of unify. It seems like the Ring of Honor titles will be phased out and just these trios belts will go between Ring of Honor and AEW as just one trios title, which maybe be for the best because it's one less ROH title appearing on AEW telly. And of course, these two promotions is just way too many belts in general. But it is amazing that, like, the Guns, this time last year, won tag gold from the Acclaimed that everybody hated it. Like, the AEW fans treated it the same way most fans treat Jinder winning the WWE title. But this time, because of the association with Jay White and this act being as over as it is, the fans were well on board with it. And Matt Scaster has been getting himself some unwanted heat, especially with his weird choice and he's rat went on a bit too long. And make a HR joke, which Andrew Bonson snatches the microphone away from him. People asking, is he trying to get himself fired?
That's it. Max Caster's raps for a while seemed absolutely stellar, top notch, could not beat them. Some of the funniest shit that I've ever seen. And lately it just feels like, it's like when Frankie Boyle hit a certain point of his career and just went, I can't be fucked anymore, I'm just going to offend everyone just for the hell of it.
I know, it seems really weird, like, what's going on with him. And also, something I need to figure out about this ad here. When did they decide to book Billy Gunn like fucking Goldberg? Because he battered Jay White in a very one-sided affair on Dynamite a couple of weeks ago. And then even he took a bat shot to the back and the Gunn's tagged finisher and still kicked out of it.
I know that was just absolute stupidity, and I read a thing and someone made the point, it's like, if anyone should have the Superman kickout sequence in that tag match, it belongs to Jay White, the younger talent, not fucking daddy ass.
I know.
In the twilight years of his career.
I know. Yeah. Like Stephen Larson, the Puggets Allison, do the others running joke, it seems to wrestling. Wrestling is the only sport where, especially if you're a man, the older you get, seemingly the stronger you get. And, you know, you just have to watch Billy Gunn recently and mainly Sting for most of his run in AEW to know that's kind of the case. I'll run down the results of the main card. There's a few main points I want to hit on. And then I'll ask you, Grant, if there's anything else that I haven't mentioned that you want to talk about. For the main card, it kicked off with Kazuchika Okada retaining his AEW Continental Championship against Pac. The House of Black defeated Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston and Mark Briscoe in a trios match. Well, a Nightingale, and a very quick match probably to cover up Julia Hart's injury that's been reported, defeated, became the new TBS champion. Roderick Strong defeated Kyle O'Reilly to retain his international championship. As I go with you, you'll notice there's too many fucking championships, I've already said. Chris Jericho defeated Hook to gain the FTW championship in an FTW rules match. Tony Storm retained her AEW Women's Championship against Thunder Rosa. Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson had an absolutely stellar contest. And the only singles, like, non-title matches on the show went over 32 minutes, but was maybe overshadowed at the end by an injury. Nick Jackson retained. The Young Bucks got the tag team titles for a third time and to win these vacant tag titles in this tournament final ladder match against FTR after help from a returning Jack Perry. And Swerve Strickland made history as the first black AEW world champion in the main event when he defeated Samoa Joe. That's the first bit I want to talk about, the main event. It's actually shorter than the two matches that preceded it, but I think it was everything it needed to be. Much like, I'd say, WrestleMania, you know, you could do all the bells and whistles you wanted as long as you got the true end destination, which was that everyone wanted, that is Cody winning the belt in the end. And you could do anything you wanted on this card and then this match, as long as you ended the show with Swerve as the champion, because as you can hear throughout the match, you know, people were very much behind Swerve. I think they wanted it Revolution, but they really wanted it here. And it goes during the last 6-8 months, Swerve Strickland's been on the run of his fucking career here in AEW.
Yeah, it was the right time for someone to take over from Joe. Joe's done a fantastic job with that title. Joe has really been stellar during the time that he's been holding the belt. He's been a very good workhorse for them, putting on a good show. But this was absolutely, if Tony didn't put the belt on Strickland here, he would possibly be the most fucking incompetent booker of the last 25 years.
Mm.
Like, the man was liquid hot going into this.
Yeah, so to be said, you know, striking while the iron is hot. And it feels like Joe's reign was kind of a thank you for his dedication to the company and, you know, got this run. So it was just long enough that he didn't feel transitional after taking it off of MJF. And, you know, I think it's been said that Tony Khan had the first four AEW champions planned out, which would be Jericho, Moxley, Omega, Hangman. And then he could kind of play about from there. Obviously, Punk was the shiny toy that he really wanted, so he eventually put the belt on him. We all knew MJF was eventually going to get the belt, and he got a chance to have that really long run with it. Joe, as I said, got this kind of thank you reign. And now Swerve got the chance to make history and kind of being rewarded from getting himself as over as he is. He had a nice little Black Panther gear when he came out, and also a tribute to Jimmy Rave with his robe as he came out, which was given to him by Prince Nana. And yeah, I definitely think that Swerve's in for a long run. Like, I think he's going to carry that belt into Wembley. And like many people, I think the big match for Wembley is Ospreay versus Swerve for the title.
Which would make sense, because the Ospreay match was just, I could fucking wax lyrical about that for days.
Oh yeah. And I was watching the post-show media scrum today, and Ospreay did give big praise to Swerve and talked about how they know each other, they've travelled through. There's those clips of them in Germany dancing to Bruno Mars. He joked about Swerve's been around his house a few times to meet his mum. So there's definitely history to play off there going into Wembley. I definitely think that's the earliest point that Swerve drops the belt, and I think he's basically going to be the guy carrying the belt through the summer. But yeah, you talk about Will Ospreay. This one, if it wasn't, I understand, you know, people say the title must always go on last, especially if it's a history-making match, like the first black champion being crowned. But on any other show, this match here between Danielson and Ospreay would have been the main event, the longest match on the show. They gave it time, and it did not feel at any point during these 32 minutes like it dragged. But unfortunately, though, it is slightly overshadowed by the very scary-looking injury with Brian Danielson off the Storm Driver 93, which Ospreay said in the post-show scrum, he's now officially retired after all this.
Which is interesting, because there has been some talk and reports that this may be overall a big work.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, I'm not opposed to the injury angle swerves that sometimes happen in wrestling, but please don't do it with someone like Danielson, who's fucking had all these problems with these injuries over the years, to the point he had to pretty much retire at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just scary. But I was waiting for it. I was like, he is definitely getting a Tiger Driver during this match, and it is going to make people feel uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, and it is like unsurprising that move. This could have like such a risk involved in it, but I think maybe he said part of me hopes that it is a work, you know, just for Dynasty, so just I know that he is okay, and you know, it'd be really great to use this to build to the rematch eventually between these two, because you definitely want to see more from them. Like, even though this was a long match, you want to see more. And you know, Ospreys were more post-match than Nick Lindo. I didn't see him call for the door, that's why I hit my finish, and he seemed like he was kayfabing it in the post-match, and like, I don't think the referee would have allowed him to hit that hidden blade that finished the match if this was a real injury. I think he would have called it then and there. Well, he looks like to think so. So maybe there is some queen, like you said, to being a work, because if it is a bit of a work, then hopefully it doesn't overshadow the match overall, because as you said, like, it was an absolute belter. Like, I haven't seen the ratings yet, but I imagine this is going to get all the stars that Dave Meltzer can properly throw at it.
That's it. And while Meltzer's ratings are always to be contested, debated and stuff like that, is there, regardless of Meltzer's rating in this, this is one of the best wrestling matches I've watched in the last year. It was unreal.
Yeah. And, you know, you're Don Callis on commentary, because Ospreay is still technically part of the Don Callis family, taking credit for it. The another big match courtesy of Don Callis for Will Ospreay. And I just can't wait for him to get everybody away from Don Callis. But it does seem like he's like Ospreay's on his second pay-per-view officially as a full-time like AEW roster member, and he's having two back-to-back bangers, and it shows he's very incapable of having really a bad match at this point. I do agree with you that don't do these injury angles too often, because, you know, I admit, going back to Ring of Honor, they did an injury angle with Billy Starks at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view in the finals for the women's TV title, whereas he feigned having a really injured neck, and then immediately after a bit of a prolonged bit, it looked like they were going to get the ready to field, oh no, it's a work, and then she wins the match, and a lot of people were very annoyed about that. So doing two injury angles and two Tony Khan umbrella under the two companies under the Tony Khan umbrella is really, like, they're both works, and like, it's going to probably make people not believe it when an injury actually does happen.
Yeah, that's it's too much. As I say, some people, you know, it works in that, but someone like that, like, imagine if they done an injury angle with Shibata involving his head, people would have a fucking shit fit.
I know. Yeah, so it's a very delicate tightrope you're walking here with this. Looking at the rest of the card, is there anything that immediately stands out to you that you want to talk about?
I want to mention Okada doing the ultimate dickhead move in the middle of his match when we thought we were getting the Rainmaker pose. And he just flips the bird to the entire world.
Unbelievable. You and I have talked in the last year on Eastmeets West about this, just transformation, this dickhead version of Okada. I mean, Okada's always been a bit of an arrogant guy, you know, even when he's maybe a face, he's like, yeah, I know how good I am. But in the last year, starting from that incident with Kaito Kiyomiya at the Noah crossover event after Wrestle Kingdom 17, there was this change of him, like, I'm not taking shit from anybody anymore. And he's carrying it over, and it seems to be just a perfect fit alongside these smug EVP Young Bucks that they've got going. And, like, where you had Pac yelling champion at him, and so as soon as Okada had him, he started kicking him and going, challenger! Or he does drinking DET on the outside, which sounded rough, and then just sits there laughing at Pac as he's rolling on the ground.
That's it. It was a really good, again, a good match. Pac, where have you been, Pac? We've missed you. You sour bastard.
I know. It was great to see Pac get a proper showcase again. Hopefully he has a chance to make it to Wembley, because injuries and visa issues have really slowed down his momentum drastically. And, you know, as much as you said, like, Jay White should have been a top title contender or top champion quite early on in his run. It's interesting to me to see that they've wasted no time in putting a belt on Okada. I mean, they had a few going spare, so they might as well give him one.
That's it. You know, Eddie Kingston was shedding belts. Someone had to pick them up here or there and everywhere, so why not Okada?
Yeah, why not? It was a hell of a showcase to show again. Give a chance for people to see, like, this is why there was all this hype around Okada, and it was a solid way to kick off the show. Something that people didn't like in terms of championships is Chris Jericho beating Hook for the FTW title, with Taz having to sit there and watch as Jericho wins the belt he created. Jericho has this weird look on his face that somebody has taken that online and photoshopped The Rock raising Roman's hand of the 2015 Rumble, that weird face he pulled on it. Because this AEW crowd, I mean, me, Ross, and Field, we all have talked shit about Jericho on this podcast over the years, but the fans here basically were at their breaking point when it comes to Jericho. There was a chance of please retire and Fozzy sucks during this match.
Not the best thing Jericho could do is let the younger talent get over him rather than going into this constant where he beats them, tries to become their mentor. I'm your best friend. I'm the cool uncle that you want to be friends with. No, Uncle Chris, you're the creepy bastard that Mum told us not to go and sit in a room alone with. But just get him off telly for like half a year. Give us 6 months Jericho free. Let people miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring him back at a point where it would make sense. Because right now it just feels like he's always got to squirrel his way into every angle at some point.
I mean, yeah, everybody taking a bat shots and kicking out multiple Judas sects, they tried their best to protect Hook and make him seem like a tough guy. So the one bright side is maybe it's about time they took Hook away from the FTW title. Like they said, across these two reigns, they said a combined like 500 days with the FTW title, which is great when you until you realise that even though it's a final pay-per-view, it's not a recognised bloody title. So with all these belts that you do actually have, maybe it's about time that Hook got a chance to actually win one of them.
Yeah, that's just fuck off, Jericho. Fuck off.
Yeah, fuck off. It's weird, like, because we've experienced this with like, New Japan. Like, they introduce a belt and they say this is what the purpose of this belt is. We're more from that, not just New Japan, but WWE belts are introduced with a purpose initially, but they often get away from that purpose like over time because they have so many belts a year. They don't know what each of them are meant to be for. Because they said in the Continental title match between Pac and Okada, like, oh, this is the workers' title, this is the wrestlers' title. Like, how can that be the wrestler's title when you also have the TNT title and the international title, which is also seemingly the wrestlers' title, especially given how great the match between Strong and O'Reilly was. So, like, you can't really see you have a workhorse title and a show and a promotion that basically prides itself on its workhorse. Like, they've even got this new tagline, oh, we're the best wrestle, which has given me a massive where the big boys play from WCW vibes.
Where the big boys play.
Ooh. Look at the adjective. So it seems like they don't even know how to distinguish each of these belts from each other, which is another thing when you have too many fucking belts. I mean, look at the bloody trios match. You've got Mouse of Black versus three guys who have three titles from three different fucking promotions.
That got out of hand. I was just like, wait, what? It's like, and I'm worried because I love the House of Black. I always have, always will. But my God, Tony, make up your mind what you're doing with them. You had them dominating for so long. You gave the Acclaimed the win at Wembley just for the fucking pop. And you've not known what to do with them since.
Yeah. Because the rule structure of that match was weird because it was basically like, oh, the fans, we want to see Malakai versus Adam Copeland. And the whole time Edge wanted to get him, and Adam Copeland and bloody Malakai Black was basically like Chris Tarrant and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Oh, I don't want to give you that. I don't want to give you that. And the right at the very end, he missed some hits in the reforming on his black mass. And the referee leans down right by his face to pin him. Like, I'm not going to question why your face and beard have suddenly gone all black. One, two, three, there's nothing going on here. And that helped him, the House of Black, get the win. But yeah, hopefully this is leading to Malakai getting the TNT title. I think he's going tied up in all these rumours, which some of which have been proven to be not true. Some of them have about like allegations that Malakai doesn't want to lose to anybody, which I think, you know, it's nothing new. I mean, he's hardly on Hulk Hogan levels as Malakai.
That's, I mean, you hear all these rumours and that, you'd think if there was any truth to it, surely Tony would just shut it down and be like, look, you're here, you have a job to do. You're not going to accept the loss, you can go somewhere fucking else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't know what to tell, I mentioned briefly the International Championship match. You had O'Reilly and Strong, and I was more into Strong here because I like O'Reilly, like watching him wrestle where he's a face or a heel. He's more charismatic though when he's part of a group as a heel, because face Kyle O'Reilly just wasn't a very place. Like, I just can't bother to listen to you talk because you bore the shit out of me, mate. And I still haven't forgiven you for Cool Kyle and your wee thing with Von Wagner. So watching this match, it was a hell of a match. I was glad to Roddy retained, but something was very interesting after the match is that the Undisputed Kingdom come out to the ramp and Adam Cole stands up out of his wheelchair. As Cultaholic Zone described on their website, Adam Cole got his own Linda McMahon at Mania X7 moment where he stood up. So he's able to walk to the ring fairly well, but apparently, according to Meltzer and from Fightful, like, he's cleared that he can kind of walk under his own strength, but he's not yet fully cleared to actually get in the ring yet. So he's making good strides. So this is starting to be wondering if Adam Cole's able to walk again. Is this a sign that MJF's return is imminent so he can finally get that blow-off match after the angle back at World's End?
That's it. I actually forgot Adam Cole was still around or what until that moment.
Yeah, it's hard to know what the fact they're actually doing with the Undisputed Kingdom, because we're thinking like, they wanted the international title, they got it. They failed for Wardlow to get the tight world title off of Joe. What the fuck are Bennett and Taven even doing other than occasionally throwing in the corner for Strong? You know, because yeah, you got the Ring of Honor tag belts, but you know, surely you guys could have entered the tournament and tried to go off a serious play for the tag team titles, or you guys and Wardlow could have went for the trios titles. Like, there's so many things you guys could be doing and you're not doing them. Like, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang got together to take on the Undisputed Kingdom. It seemed like they did no interaction, and eventually the group split up before they even had a chance to even do anything of note. And people, and that led to, as we mentioned, the whole ultimate culmination of that group was a match on the pre-show.
That's it. It's just, it's such a weird, weird situation.
Yeah, I mean, things, they don't get me wrong, was a hell of a preview, I'm sure you'd agree, like with all these matches, and like Revolution was a stellar pay-per-view, but there are these issues and more you talk about that are lingering. And Dewey Gamble brought this point up, but I don't know if you agree, because after the whole controversy of like showing the Wembley footage, like, it feels like AEW is succeeding in spite of Tony Khan.
Yeah, that it feels like Tony is almost self-sabotaging at so many points. Like, regardless of what's going on in the weekly shows, it's very weird. They can barely do a compelling, structured weekly show week in, week out. But somehow AEW always managed to pull it out their arse at the pay-per-view. It's like everyone's been slacking. It's like, oh shit, the boss is coming. Quick, everyone, get together.
That is pretty much what it's like. And you'd argue that's why they should be delivering, you know, the big shows and everything, but they do need to sort some things out that are more prevalent on the weekly TV, because that will encourage even more people to tune into the pay-per-views where you end up, you know, delivering. But the other two things I want to mention from the show before we move on is obviously it's great to see two great women's matches on the show, with Willow getting her much-deserved run with the TBS title, and they kept the match short because allegedly Julia Hart is dealing with some injuries. And we got a stellar match between Tony and Thunder Rosa, which many people why they got into Thunder Rosa to begin with, and it showed a little bit of signs of the old Tony Storm. But also the thing we talked about on Eastman West, which was rumored to happen, like it seemed like Jack Perry finished up after the loss to Shota Umino at New Japan's Windy City Riot. Jack Perry made his return, pushing Dax Harwood off the ladder, returning wearing a Sting mask disguise, and helping the Young Bucks win the tag team titles. So Jack Perry is finally back in AEW. The scapegoat is back. Is he part of the Elite? We don't know, but maybe it's a sign that Tony Khan's gotten over his issues. He's not got the huff of them anymore for kind of costing him CM Punk, as it was reported.
That's it. The Jack Perry return, was it a surprise? Absolutely not. But I'll be honest. They kind of had to do it. They built everything towards it. It works well, the whole Bucks gimmick right now. The Bucks FTR match, I don't care what people say, you put these two teams together, you're always going to get a good match. The two of them are very good at tag team wrestling. Whether you like the Bucks or not, they are very good at understanding the psychology of tag team wrestling. FTR are amongst the top for that. You put the two of them together, you're going to get gold. Did the right team win? To be honest, I didn't care what team won on this one, because I feel both teams have had the spotlight in the tag team division far too many times in AEW, and it is time to give it to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But one hell of a match, it was very bloody, very violent. You know, you had the pile driver on one of the ladders, which didn't break, it just kind of, when the end just kind of fell. You had some scary looking table bumps. Dax Harwood with a very nasty looking blade job during the match, you know, I think because he was bowling made it look worse than it was. There was also a fun spot where one of the Bucks got thrown off the ladder and caught into a shatter machine, which looked very, like, it was very hard one to pull off, but they managed to do it. But, you know, talking about Jeff Harris being in New Japan, you know, usually when there's a New Japan related story on this show, Ross would be like, oh, well, let's go and grant the experts to talk about it on East Meets West. Well, the experts are here now, so we're going to talk about it. The IWGP World Championship, which is now around the waist of John Moxley, the AEW superstar, is going to be defended tonight on Dynamite at Time Recording against Will Hobbs. So John Moxley's got big defences planned for the start of May against Rey Narita, and possibly to use that to go on to fight Shota Umino later on in the month in California. But now the title is being defended on AEW TV. So as me, you and I said, this is kind of this cross-promotional relationship paying dividends for both companies, and it's a hell of an opportunity for Will Hobbs.
The fuck has Will Hobbs done to deserve this? The only reason I'm accepting this is if, Stephen, I want my fucking points for the IWGP heavyweight title being defended on the Dynamite.
I think you're just screaming into the void when it comes to trying to convince them to give you the points for that. I remember I tried in vain to get the $1 million title to have points when LA Knight had that weird feud with Cameron Grimes, but that was not to be. I don't even think the FTW title at this point gives you any points in the draft, so, you know, the rules, you know, what are they? Who knows?
Pish, that's what they are. Absolute pish.
But AEW wasn't alone in the pay-per-view market this weekend. It was the night before, we had TNA Rebellion in Las Vegas, and, you know, me personally, overall, maybe it wasn't as good as Hard to Kill at the same venue a couple months ago, but it still had some stuff that we're talking about. And the most notable thing is the fact there were three major returns on this show. You had Sami Callihan returning during the weird melee during the women's during the Knockouts title match to help fend off the Good Hands and Khan during that big mess and help Jordan Grace retain over Steph DeLander. You had Mike Santana being re-signed to the company and coming out as a mystery opponent for Steve Maclin, and might have went on a bit longer than you thought it would, but Mike Santana got the win in the company where he's originally part of a new version of LAX. And after, you know, despite his family being in the front row, Nick Nemeth failed to beat Moose for the title. You had Ryan Nemeth looking sad, Nick Nemeth's dad looking like he'd rather be anywhere fucking else. As the system were celebrating a successful evening, who would return but broken Matt Hardy? You know, it's ironic, one of his fears was, I knew you'd come, because as soon as he left AEW, I thought, oh, he's coming back to WWE. Not one person thought he was going to return to TNA, let alone as broken Matt Hardy, you know, the one place where the broken gimmick has actually been successful.
Oh, God, he's back again. The Hardys, where do I stand in the Hardys? A team that I want the two of them to take a break. Matt almost got killed like several times. At least Sammy is nowhere near him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel he's safer with Sammy Callahan than he is with Sammy Guevara. And Sammy Callahan does some fucking wild stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I think Ross summed it up at one point. It's like, will it be a fun match having Matt Hardy back? Yes, but he should not be winning any titles.
I mean, maybe not the world title. You got the digital media title with the weird skits he can do on his compound. I think that would be a great title for him. And, you know, I think with TNA's like taped schedule and everything, you can interwove the broken universe into that. And it was one of the highlights of 2016, 2017 TNA. That was a bad period for them. You know, there was one episode of Impact where the entire show was hosted at the Hardy compound. So there's all sorts of fun things you can do with that. Looking at the other one, Sami Callihan's interesting because he only just left at the end of last year where he wanted to explore free agency. So now he's returned. He and Matt, I think, are still free agents, but they are seemingly part of TNA again. In some way, they're both big parts of the tapings the next night. And Santana, I think, is the only one who's actually signed. And I think this is part of the big singles run he's wanting to have since ending his tagging with Ortiz. But seemingly realised he wasn't going to get it in AEW. So he thought, might as well go to, you know, a smaller pond where I think with TNA, it's a smaller like pond of talent, but it means more talent can stand out. And I think Santana's going to be a beneficiary of that.
Yeah, I think he's going to benefit. I've just gone back to Matt Hardy. You've given me an absolute fucking stellar idea in my mind now, thinking about the Matt Hardy compound. That I can just imagine Matt Hardy with that digital media championship, say, being all delete, who will challenge me? And then all of a sudden, booming out over the speakers of the Matt Hardy compound is, say his name, and he appears. Joe Hendry
and Matt Hardy, I can't even begin to talk about how good I've been. Joe Hendry, by the way, his song has invaded my TikTok timeline, by the way. I don't even go on TikTok that often. But whenever I do, every other video is something to do with... I mean, two things I find in my TikTok timeline right now are people playing that song or people doing lip syncs to Matt Berry quotes for some reason. But he's actually releasing the song, I Believe in Joe Hendry, on Spotify later on this week, like right at the end of April. So you can all believe in Joe Hendry as many times as you want. But part of me wants to do a skit once Matt Hardy is healed up from injury. I want him to do a thing with Matt Hardy, digital media champion, on his compound. You know, the Deathmatch King, the internet champion versus the digital media champion, and part of the Broken Universe. That would mainly so that Matt Hardy can go into the like a reincarnation, come out as his old Zack Ryder gimmick.
Oh god, that would be absolutely fucking brilliant.
What a decent card though. Like the Nightmare match, joking aside about him losing in front of his family, was a good match. You know, Nightmare's been on this run where he's going around the Indies, he's been in Japan winning the global championship, and he could have gotten gold in both TNA and New Japan at the same time, but that was not to be. You had the system, Brian Myers and Edwards retaining against B-Ball Mountain, Mike Bailey and Trent Seven. You had Josh Alexander and Hammerstone in a last man's down match. But we had Mustafa Ali versus Jake something in an okay match, but not the hot opener I was expecting to be for the X Division title. But some of these great matches have sadly been overshadowed by a really scary looking spot at the end of the Full Metal Mayhem match. Frankie Kazarian went to give a Spanish fly to Eric Young off the top through a table. They kind of caught the edge and it kind of partly broke, and there was a real gash over the ear and on the side of the head of Eric. It seemed like he nearly severed his ear, it seemed like, in the aftermath, and he managed to reattach it, but you see at the table with a big bandage around his head, and the match was very quickly ended from there on. So, you know, it was very... I watched it live and it was fucking terrifying to watch.
Yeah, apparently it was mostly severed and had to be reattached. I mean, it shows you wrestling's got soft. Back in the day, we would have just glued that back on and keep it going. You know, Mick Foley didn't lose half an ear for nothing for this.
Well, apparently he hung around too long after the show with like fans and that. If he'd gotten to hospital quicker, they could have reattached it, according to the stories.
Yeah, you know, that's Eric Young. You know, that's like saying, it's like, I want to see Mick Foley. We have Mick Foley at home.
I mean, I've not been into this feud between Eric Young and Kazarian, but I was enjoying the match, and then that happened, and it was kind of... It did very much, like, the way that Kazarian quickly went into the cover, you're like, this is pretty much a fucking pin, and we need to get him the fuck out of here kind of moment. And with, like, the Danielson one as well, like, you had two pay-per-views with very scary-looking moments here, so probably the ones you don't really want to see. You want to... Much, even if you don't like somebody, you don't want to see them get, like... legitimately hurt during a match.
Yeah, that's it. It was, but yeah, I mean, why they went for that spot for that Spanish fly? It was a Spanish fly without the fly.
Mhm. Yeah, it was falling with very little style. That's how I've described it. One other thing I'll say about Rebellion is Rich Swann versus Joe Hendry is one of the weirdest and possibly one of the worst matches I've seen on TNA pay-per-view in a while. Because with all these people that were associated with AJ Francis, who's in the Rich Swann's corner, and it was just weird. This weird football just randomly gets over the guardrail and behind the ref's back attacks Joe Hendry, and the referee doesn't even look at it. And security aren't trying to stop him from getting past the guardrail. And then this woman randomly twerks on Joe Hendry, so Twitter really thought Joe Hendry was the winner after all that.
I've not really watched TNA much recently. I've seen clips in that match. I feel disappointed because Joe Hendry's generally been doing pretty good in TNA. He's over with the fans, and it just sounds like this match was just not the match for him.
No, weirdly, I think since the rebound of TNA, he started this thing with AJ Francis, the former top dollar, and it's really just weighed him down. Like, he's stuck in this thing where, like, you thought, oh, AJ's not the best wrestler, but he's got Rich Swann. These two can have a solid match, but no, tied out in all this bollocks at these people that AJ Francis just happens to know. But I just want Joe Hendry to get the hell out of there and into another feud. You know, get him in the title, so you get him in with Mustafa Ali, get him in with Moose in the world title. You know, he definitely, because he elevated the bloody digital media title, so, you know, take advantage of the, like, success and the popularity of Joe Hendry and actually do something with him, TNA.
That's it, because, I mean, they had Hendry all those years ago and they didn't know what to do with him, and they let him go. Back around about the time what Grado was trying to make a bash into TNA as well, and it just didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it feels like now the Joe Hendry is a complete package. They've got Absolutely. The right thing. Just use it. You've got a great toy right there. Use them.
Exactly. Going into WWE and some sad news, because as much as I don't really think much of some of these people in terms of, like, how they were used and everything, it's sad when somebody loses their job, and there have been some WWE releases here. Usually there would be some after WrestleMania, but, you know, they've kind of moved away from the whole weird spring cleaning thing that they used to be called. So there have been several releases from WWE. We had Jinder Mahal, Zion Quinn, Xia Li, Sangha, Veer Mahan, Von Wagner, and then a couple of days afterwards we had Cameron Grimes getting released. Most of them really weren't doing anything anyway. Jinder Mahal, I think, is one of the more high-profile ones, being a former WWE champion. But Cameron Grimes is another one who has gone a lot of time, especially after he posted that very emotional video upon his when discovering his release. Because he'd been called up to SmackDown, and then they did nothing with him for almost immediately after he got called up, getting himself over in NXT, you know, that feud with $1 million title, getting that brief run as North American champion. You know, talking about TNA, he did have a great run in TNA as Trevor Lee, and I think he's more likely going to go back there. But what were your thoughts on the release? I think Jinder and Cameron Grimes are the two most notable of these releases.
Well, veered off course. All that time he was meant to be going back to Raw, and he just went the wrong way. it's hard to say. I mean, I can't say I'm necessarily surprised by the releases. And at the end of the day, it's sad. I don't want to see anyone lose their job in wrestling. You know, it's a shame when this happens. But I know Grimes, I feel sorry for, because he was a fantastic wrestler and they had some really fun stuff in NXT. But when they moved to the main roster, they just kind of brought him up and I'm like, okay, son, go play with yourself in the corner. You'll be all right. But what do I do? Just stay over there. Do your wee thing. Okay.
Yeah, like, there seemed to be a lot of potential with him, with Cameron Grimes. When he got called in, I think he stayed next to you a bit too long, and then by the time they got in there, they didn't know what to do, because I think he got called up right about that kind of transitional period between Vince and Triple H, so, like, they weren't that many plans for him upon his call-up. Jinder is one of the more notable ones, like I said, because former WWE champion, but, you know, jokes have been said about David Hockney and his dislike of it, as many other people have disliked the decision to put the belt on Jinder. But, like, after that, they tried to find a place for him. Like, they gave him the US title. I think he could have been a solid mid-card champion, kept far away from the world title. But they really kicked him off, took it off him after a couple of weeks and never really gave him a shot there again. And then they tried to put him in feuds with other guys who make him, like, a mid-card, like, heel that they could get easy wins off and he could still work with notable talent. But instead of elevating Jinder, it felt like you were dragging those talents. Then, like, he's worked with Roman, he worked a major program with Drew. Like, Drew, like, SummerSlam 2021, after Drew carried the company as WWE champion through the pandemic for a stadium show in front of fans in 2021, what's he doing? Fighting Jinder, which nobody really wanted to see. And his main contribution was introducing us to Indu Share on the main roster, which isn't really something to hang your hat on.
That's it. It's not exactly going to like make big things happen, is it? It's not a needle mover.
No. And yeah, Veer Mahan, you know, spent all that time coming, he's now going. And, you know, Von Wagner as well. It felt like at the start of NXT 2.0, you had your Carmelo Hayes and your Braun Breaker. Like, these are the guys we want to push. And these guys, over time, really got over. And then you had Von Wagner as the other one, who they also wanted to make a thing. And no matter what they did, it's just like, it's not happening. Like, they pretty much, they tried him as a face, then as a heel, then this is almost weird comedy act with Robert Stone. Because I think they very realised quickly, like, yeah, he's not going to be the main eventer that we wanted him to be, because that was literally a report at one point. WWE sees Von Wagner as a WrestleMania main eventer.
Von Wagner still had plenty of potential. They just did not seem to know what to do with him. I'm kind of hoping that maybe going somewhere else will be what he needs to bring things back up to where he wanted to be.
Looking at these guys, obviously there's the usual non-compete clause. I think they all had like 90 days, but there is reports now that we're moving closer to these non-compete clauses in all walks of work, not just wrestling, being kind of basically banned in general, and people making arguments that it's not fair for employers to put these non-compete clauses in, or the Fair Trade Commission's, you know, arguing against this, which I think for us as wrestling fans is interesting, because the removal of non-compete clauses makes it even more interesting when a wrestler leaves a company. They were used to waiting a certain period of time and then getting the anticipation of where they're going to go and everything, but I think without it, we can get that feeling back from like back in the 90s of somebody leaving and just showing up somewhere. You know, it's been a long time since they had like a Rick Rude on Raw and Nitro on the same night, or Lex Luger showing up on Nitro and nobody realised that his contract expired with the WWF. So if somebody doesn't need to wait 98 days, they can like leave WWE, and then the following week on AEW, just like, oh look, there they are on Dynamite, we can have that surprise again, you know.
Give us a surprise.
Yeah. Like the closest we've had to those examples I mentioned before is like when they forgot to move Malakai Black's non-compete from NXT to WWE. So even though he's on the main roster for like 3 years, he still had a 30-day non-compete. And so very shockingly, he showed up on Dynamite 1 week earlier than anybody expected. So that's the closest we've gotten to that kind of, oh fuck, here's somebody who was from another place, now they're here again.
Like, where did you come from? It's like that meme from The Office. Ah, where did you come from?
So, there's a lot that goes into in terms of like the federal motion to like move non-compete clause, which I'm not going to get into because it's a lot of reading and I don't want to. Because we've also got a lot to talk about anyway. Now, moving it more local to Scotland, to Glasgow, the pre-sale today, being Wednesday at time recording, for Clash at the Castle tickets went on sale. The pre-sale started today, and well, it was a hell of a thing. There's been a lot of discourse online with the prices of the tickets being absurd, to say the least. Nobody from ESSR other than Guy, I don't think, was actually able to get tickets in the pre-sale, despite everybody joining the queue very early in the morning when it went on sale. David Hockney was buying tickets for me and Ross, but he wasn't able to get any, so we're trying tomorrow, Thursday, or maybe the general sale Friday, so you can still get tickets. But at time of recording, nobody other than Gary on the ESR team has actually got tickets for Clash of Castle, even though it's in our own backyard with the Hydro and everything. But I just to see what it was like joining the queue on my own Ticketmaster. When I joined, I was like 14,000 odd in the queue. That's how crazy it was. And I don't even think it's around the 14,000 mark that the bloody Hydro holds. So to be that much in the queue shows there's more demand for the tickets than the bloody venue will hold.
I got in the queue. I was about 200 in the queue. Got in, got up. I could have got tickets if I was willing to spend at least £800. Absolutely fucking not.
Yeah, like that was interesting. Sorry.
That price is absolutely ridiculous. And it's apparently been confirmed by one of the websites, WrestleTix, that they didn't sell any tickets for under £300 today. The cheap seats were held off. We've not had access to the cheap stuff yet.
Yeah, because like, I think there were some tickets being for like higher up in the levels, and like maybe for some of us, maybe I need to resort to the cheaper seats, because, you know, I mean, the higher, they call them the cheap seats, but the higher you go up in certain venues like that, and like we were quite high up when we were at Wembley, and there was a balcony just before in front of us, but like that sometimes gives you the better views. Because everyone says at ringside you can high-five the wrestlers and see them coming, like it's great during the matches, but you get a better view when you're high up, I think. But yeah, the receipts we were seeing, getting screenshots of, like, of really neat, like £340 odd, and these are like right at the very tippy top of the fucking Hydro for some of them. But then again, you have to remember most of these being sold are combo tickets for the Friday Night SmackDown and for bloody the Clash of Castle pay-per-view, so you're basically buying a 2-for-1 here. But you know, should we use it? I think it was the same thing for the O2 in London when they came from Money in the Bank, because they wanted a smaller venue, so they've jacked the bloody ticket prices up.
I took a look at, I took two screenshots this morning when I was trying to get tickets. The first ticket offered me was in section 5, row D, on level O, so I would have been fourth row. That was £940. If I wanted to go, this is the real weird thing, section 9, row J, which would technically be further back, they were asking me for £1,160.40 for the two nights. Now, I hate that they're forcing you for the two nights as well, because I'll be honest, the SmackDown the night before it isn't going to be all that stacked with matches, because they'll be wanting to keep everyone healthy for the actual main pay-per-view.
I think that's the thing. I think it's because it's going to be like the done thing. Now that they're doing it a week on Friday with Paris, they're doing the Friday night SmackDown, then the backlash on the Saturday. They're doing it in Saudi Arabia when they go for King of the Ring. So I think it's going to be a thing that's the appeal. Like, not only are you getting a pay-per-view, you're getting a bit of weekly TV, which for France, Saudi Arabia, and for Glasgow, to get a SmackDown or any kind of WWE TV as well as a pay-per-view, I think that's the draw. Like, not only do you get a pay-per-view, you're getting weekly TV, because we haven't had a SmackDown taping in Glasgow since 2016. So I think that's the maybe the appeal of it, more so than the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's because, I mean, I was at the last Raw one we'd done several years back in Glasgow. And I talked about it with my brother afterwards, because me and him went, and we prefer the house shows when it comes to it, because you actually get matches rather than, right, let's sit down for 3 hours, right, we're getting like five matches and a shit ton of talking. No, I want to watch the wrestling.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that we were on tour in the UK. They recently did, like, I think it was London, Birmingham, Cardiff, and like Belfast. So they came everywhere but Scotland, because they knew they were coming later in the year for Clash at the Castle. But I went to a house show in like late 2022, and they were advertising the April tour, and they advertised a UK tour in Glasgow. Was it the tour they advertised didn't have any fucking Glasgow dates in it, which was weird at the time. But looking at the thing where it sent my passcode thing for like the pre-sale, I always find it interesting who they advertise for these shows, because the one me and Ross went to, the one in 2022, said so-and-so, these matches, most of them happen. And went, and so-and-so versus Riddick Moss. Plus, Riddick Moss. Oh, we get double Riddick Moss, do we? And then, in the end, we went to the show. Riddick Moss was nowhere to be fucking found on this show. So, sometimes people that they advertise don't show up. But the list of the talent they put on, like, you see your favourite WWE superstar live in Glasgow, and it says, Undisputed Champion, Cody Rhodes. Scottish Warrior, Drew McIntyre. The EST, Bianca Belair. WWE Women's Champion, Bayley. Hall of Famer, Rey Mysterio. The Viper, Randy. And the Almighty, Bobby Lashley. Jade Cargill, Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, LA Knight, Io Sky, and many more. So these are the main names that they've advertised. Both of them are on the poster. I didn't love the fact that they've not even advertised the World Heavyweight Champion, Damian Priest.
Which is still a wild, wild fact. That's like, did you just make up this email at an earlier point?
I mean, yeah, you can have any, maybe not on the SmackDown, but surely the pay-per-view's a cross-branded thing, so it'll be on the bloody pay-per-view, surely.
You'd hope.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I can hope so. Anyway. Yeah, it's weird, and like, there's been a lot of discourse online and in our group chat, you know, people, and Alan particularly has been very angry with, because I think it's more so about general ticket prices in general, especially for the prices of most concerts, especially for places like the Hydro. And you can see why WWE's doing the Hydro, because of other venues being used for like fan parks, the Euros and things like that. Like, literally the Friday they're coming to the SmackDown is like the same day as Scotland versus Germany. So if you're a football fan as well as a wrestling fan, I'd recommend you go to SmackDown, you'll be much happier. But because like they said with London, I think some people said it, like, oh, it's the most successful show we've done in London or England in a long time, Money in the Bank. Yeah, because you charged more even though you had less people.
That's it, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you can be, it's easy to be the most financially successful thing in a particular market when you charge like fuck to the people in that market, and other people are like annoyed because they wanted to go, but then like, oh, I don't have a spare £900 or £1,000 odds. But like when me and Ross went to the Hydro for the Raw back in 2016, we were pretty much right up the back. The only difference is it didn't cost us £340 to get those tickets.
That's it. The prices are just astronomically high, and I find it hard to justify it. It's just ridiculous.
I think for some of these tickets, I look at them like, I didn't even spend that much for when I was in London, when I went to Wembley, and I was there for two fucking days. That's how much some of these fucking sections are. I know Wembley, some of the prices we got for tickets like were less because of the size of the venue, but again, it shows maybe you shouldn't have done the bloody hydro if you're just going to fucking charge people like this. But we're pretty much basically like, it's fucking dear, and but which is good, and also because if you can't afford to go, like, you've got a show in your own backyard, a SmackDown and a pay-per-view, and because of these shitty ticket prices, you're getting some fans who really want to go who now can't go, even though the show is very local to them. Bullshit, I say. Bullshit. But talking of WWE, we had Raw this Monday. The two most notable stories I've got from Raw were Becky Lynch winning the Battle Royal to win the vacant Women's World Championship, and Giovanni Vinci being kicked out of Imperium after a loss to the New Day. So it seems like Imperium might continue on as Kaiser and Gunther. Gunther is on the show, also set his sights on the King of the Ring, as did Drew McIntyre. But I think with Becky Lynch, it's quite surprising. I think everyone and their mother was putting money on Liv Morgan to win the title, but I think maybe there's more to it, maybe because it'll be a few months until Rhea is back. Maybe they want to use Becky to help get this heel version of Liv over. Maybe having Liv win the belt from Becky, do you think, would be a bigger moment in their eyes?
Yeah, I think doing the Battle Royale for a vacant title is a little bit... It takes away a certain level of crowning glory for the win. So someone like Becky, she's got enough popularity, being well over with the crowd, that she can win it. She can run with it with a little bit, a couple of defences under her belt. Let Liv build up this character work in the background so that when Liv does it, it will mean a lot more. And I think a good example is back to when Liv got the SmackDown Women's belt she got off Rousey.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, like that was actually, when they done that with Liv, it made it mean something because of how they'd built up things beforehand. And I think they're going to do it again with her.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're using Becky as this veteran to help get her. I think they'll use her with this reign the same way they used her when she was NXT Women's Champion. Yeah, get some people over in the process, particularly a person that takes the belt off her. Because they could have easily have Liv win it here, the same way they could have just had Lyra Valkyrie win the belt from Tiffany Stratton directly. But by having Becky in there, added some further prestige to the win and to the belt. And I remember like they had some matches these two over the Raw Women's title in like 2022, and it seemed like Liv was ready to like take the belt and people would have gotten into it, but they were saving Becky to lose it to bloody Bianca at WrestleMania, so felt good that Liv couldn't have that moment. But yeah, and our SmackDown reign was kind of picked out by some people because it kept being her and Roy Rousey like questionable finishes. But I think with this one, she's a chance as a heel to have a really strong reign and ultimately culminating in the money feud that is her versus Rhea Ripley when Rhea comes back.
Yeah, definitely.
I think if you're a fan of old school like ring camps and everything, I mean, I know Vince was in it, but he was an important part of it as part of bloody WWE's version of it with Imperium. And seeing him just get kicked to the curb on Raw was quite sad to see. I didn't want to see these group, like anyone get kicked out of this group, because I was there in Glasgow, NXT UK, when this group was formed. And Vince has secretly been one of my favourite ones of the three, because I think people don't realise just how good he actually is in the ring. But for months of teasing, no, Imperium are Gunther's greatest Intercontinental Champion, but these two keep fucking up. Eventually, it just came to a head, and the tag team of Vinci and Kaiser are no more.
It's a shame to see them split up that way, but with other things that have happened on another brand, there's a big opening there that someone very popular and very cool could take up.
Yes, they're saying Italy is so last year. We need somebody from Russia, potentially, as part of our group. You know, that guy's got a history of being feuding with Gunther, but maybe that'll be part of the story that Triple H tried to tell. But I did love there was a caption of like, to get Vinci taking a really wicked looking kick from Kaiser. The caption was, when Kaiser found out Vinci had been liking Tiffany Stratton's Instagram posts.
I'll just like this.
But yeah, you mentioned a certain somebody, you had NXT Spring Breaking It's been going across 2 weeks. The two big matches from this week were Roxanne Perez retaining her NXT Women's Championship against Tatum Paxley and Lyra Valkyria, and Ilya Dragunov losing the NXT Championship to Trick Williams. This is like the fourth time that Trick Williams had tried to challenge Dragunov, and so he finally won. You know, his NXT career was on the line and everything. He'd vanquished Carmelo Hayes in two big matches, one at Standalone and one in a cage match the week before. And in a callback to their match at Vengeance, I think it was, where like they were both going for the knee in the Torpedo Moscow, respectively. Vengeance was Dragunov, who was that bit quicker, but this time Trick was that bit quicker. He got the win. The NXT crowd went fucking mental, as did Booker T. And reports are that basically post-draft, it looks like Trick Williams for the time being will be built as the face of NXT.
Good call, really. He's more than earned it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's always that thing with the guy who's the star, or they see as the star, and like in this case, Carmelo Hayes, and the sidekick, and eventually try and break them up. But sometimes when they try and push the bigger guy who's like the sidekick, it doesn't always work. But Trick, since like late last year, he had that thing with the North American title with Dominic. Like, he's really come into his own. I don't think anyone could have predicted how over he would get. You know, it makes Booker T briefly worthwhile being on commentary with his "what? Oh yeah," during his entrances.
What a trick!
It's a hell of a statement, because like in a couple of weeks he's kind of vanquished Carmelo Hayes, who's probably going to get called up, and he's taken out Ilya Dragunov, and that's a real statement win for Trick Williams. And also in the last week, it's a big statement for Black Wrestling in general, because you had Swerve win at the pay-per-view, you had Willow Nightingale getting over another Black Wrestling, and then Trick here. So it's a real good sign here with, you know, a change in times, these more diverse wrestlers getting this push. You know, basically Trick pretty much being made the new face of the brand by taking out two of the brand's bigger faces to that point.
It's absolutely massive, and I don't know if you've seen R-Truth's celebration about Swerve's win, which was absolutely glorious on Twitter.
I hadn't had a chance. I heard he said something, but I hadn't had a chance to look at it.
He tagged Kofi Kingston saying, "How did you even get in there? That's amazing."
Of course he did. It's very typical R-Truth. But we also, next week on NXT, you've got two big matches. We've got a couple of big matches. It's week two of Spring Break, where we've got Obafemi getting challenged by Ivar for his North American Championship. You have, in the draft-wise, it's my tag team versus your tag team, when Fraser and Axiom defend their tag titles against the AOP. And we've got NXT Underground with Natalia, I can't remember who it is in her corner, but you've got her versus Lola Vice with Shayna Baszler in her corner. And David Campbell really wanted us to mention that Shayna Baszler was back in NXT, so there you go. It's like Raw Underground, but in front of more people. But maybe not as shit. But yeah. Roxanne Perez won her match. You know, she said that the only time she'll lose this title is when she gets called up, which is rumored to be happening in the upcoming draft. So we could see her vacate that belt very soon when she comes up to the main roster. But that's our final little bit here. Our final story is looking ahead to this Friday, will be night one of the draft, followed by this coming Monday will be pool two. Although there's two separate talent pools eligible for drafting, and the roster will take effect the Monday after Backlash. So it's quite interesting here. This will be our big question. What are some of your predictions? Who do you think will get drafted? Who are you seeing your main people you think are going to switch from Raw to SmackDown, SmackDown to Raw? And who do you think will get called up from NXT? I'm going to read out these talent pools here. There's a couple of big ones here, so give me a chance. I'll need you to step in with your thoughts as soon as I'm done here, because it's a lot of talking I need to do here. So pool one, the people that are available this Friday for drafting are AJ Styles, Alba Fire, Isla Dawn, Owl of Alpha Academy, Andrade, Bianca Belair, Ricochet, Nia Jax, Randy Orton, Zoe Stark, Mia Yim, The Good Brothers, Paul Heyman, Tama Tonga, Solo, Roman Reigns, Sheamus, Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, sorry, the makeup made me think of Ronda Rousey, but Shayna Baszler, Seth Rollins, Braun Breaker, Cedric Alexander, Ashanti the Adonis, Ivar, Jeyus, I think it's you, so I can't tell if it's you or Jimmy Uso there. LA Knight, Liv Morgan. No, interesting, no Cody Rhodes there. And then the Raw pool is pretty much everybody else. You got Braun Strowman, DIY, Apollo Crews, he's still there. Bronson Reed, IO and Candice and Indy, Piper and Chelsea Green, CM Punk, the Creed Brothers, Ivy and Io, Damage Control, Drew McIntyre, Karrion Kross and The Final Testament, Vici, Imperium, The Judgment Day, Katana Chance and Kaden Carter, Kevin Owens, Santos Escobar, Olaf Legado, Natalia, Naomi, Jade Cargill, Selena Vega, LWO, Tiffany Stratton, New Catch Republic, The New Day, Odyssey Jones and his favourite wrestler, Pretty Deadly, Shinsuke Nakamura, Tegan Nox, Bobby Lashley and his lot, and I think Cody Rhodes as well. Actually, I don't see Cody or Damien.
The rules have been decided. The champions on each brand are protected.
Ah, that's why. I thought. Well, surely a big thing was, surely, like SmackDown Day One, you know, pick one is Cody Rhodes to SmackDown, and then the first pick for the next pool would be Damian Priest to Raw. So that's good. Yeah, the top champions. Is it just the top champions, or is it all the champions?
All the champions. The only exception that they have mentioned is that the women's tag team champions are eligible.
See, because David Campbell did pitch a thing in the group chat, maybe you'd have a set of tag champions, like maybe Bianca and Jade would win, which has been teased, but then we'd get drafted to separate shows. And the only person I can think of is, oh yeah, like Jerry's show in 2009, where they were unified tag champ on separate brands, which I'm sure everybody fondly remembers. But that is weird, you know, it does take some intrigue away. Sometimes one of the entries was seeing the titles move, but I think given where that three out of the four titles on Raw are World in them, and three out of the four on SmackDown have WWE in them, they don't want to mix and match them, but you could have easily switched the US and IC titles probably around if you wanted to. But yeah, also each of it says some NXT stars eligible as well, they haven't said who. So I'll take a drink and try and catch my breath after all that talking. What are some of your predictions that you like to see, either in terms of move from Raw to SmackDown, like shock picks, some things you think maybe a bit more predictable, and who do you think is getting called up from NXT, and where are they going?
NXT, Ilya's coming up. It feels an absolute must happen. Ilya has done everything that he can in NXT. As we kind of hinted earlier on, I love the idea of him joining Imperium. I think it could be a fantastic fit for the Mad Dragon. Absolutely stellar. Looking at some of the others, I could see the Bloodline settling over in Raw. I think there's some interesting possibilities for them over in the Raw roster. Some of the people that they've got mentioned for the draft are people that I forgot were even around, because it feels like I've not seen them in forever. Let's see who else we will. I could see Bron Breakers in the mix. I would probably move him to Raw. It's the size of some of the stables is going to be your biggest obstacle, because some of these stables are pretty big. So is it going to be the chopping block for some stables? Are some of them going to get split up, or are they going to try and make a presence across two brands? Imperium, I can see making the move over to SmackDown.
Oh yeah, I definitely like Vinci. I think Vinci maybe stay where he is, and Kaiser and Gunther go over to SmackDown, because I think if Gunther wins King of the Ring, which I'd like to see him do, I think eventually by the summer, we're in a bit Bash at Berlin time, Gunther versus Corey is the money match for the WWE title.
Could be a good shout.
There's also some people who aren't on TV but are still being talked about for the draft, so it'll tell you where they're going to go when they come out. Like Punk hasn't been seen since the Raw after WrestleMania. You got Roman eligible, but is he getting, even though he's next to the rest of the Bloodline on the table, is he getting drafted with the rest of the Bloodline, or is he getting drafted with his own? Because there's all this question of, you know, Solo's actions by order of the Tribal Chief, like trying to murder Kevin Owens this past week. You know, is it by orders of the Tribal Chief, as in he's calling himself the Tribal Chief, or is he getting orders from Roman secretly or someone else? So that'll be interesting to see what happens. I think I can see Roman getting drafted on his own, but Solo, Tama, and Payman going as another group.
That's it. There's the Bloodline definitely is got an interesting idea. Because I don't watch enough WWE these days, for me a lot of it is guesswork. I don't have enough information to really make a proper guess, so anything I make would be taken with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I would say yeah, Gunther and that Cody SmackDown. I could actually see Lashley and the Profits going over to Raw. I mean, I know the Profits just mean they're more contenders for the WWE tag team titles, but still, you get that. I think it'd be a good like first defense for A-Town Down Under. Then they could go over to Raw and try and win the World Tag Titles. I think with Braun being on here, but they said some NXT like people considered, is Baron Corbin technically an NXT guy now? Again, he's been there so long. Because my main thing is I want Baron to be drafted up to the main roster, go wherever Braun goes, and let the Wolf Dogs dominate the tag division on Raw or SmackDown.
That's they've not really made that. Well, Braun Breaker is showing in the picture for the SmackDown draft of side of things. So there is that. But really, it's going to be, I think, a lot of people are going to have their thoughts on the draft pools and where the roster is going to end up. Whatever they go with, I hope that they've got a long-term plan, that they don't just do this on a whim, that they've got an idea of what stories they want to line up for the next several months, because I hate the idea of them going through the draft and then just suddenly being like, oh no, we made a mistake, let's go and shift people around again.
Yeah. Another cool thing, I think I could see Jay going over to Raw, and I think Jay also gets drafted back to SmackDown so he can get him back involved with the Bloodline story. Maybe he comes to Jimmy's aid and see a bit of a reunion of the Usos against this new group led by Solo. Also, the irony is not lost that the son of Rikishi, who tried to hit Stone Cold with a car for The Rock, got somebody to hit someone else with a car.
He did it for The Rock.
He did it for the Tribal Chief. But in terms of the Dragunov, I think him going to SmackDown, if that's where Imperium go, Roxanne, I could see Roxanne and Carmel, I think they come up and they go to Raw, maybe. I could see that. I don't know, other than those three, who are the most notable NXT people to come up are. I don't know if there's anyone who's particularly primed, like maybe Tony D'Angelo could get a call up, but it feels like those main three are the ones you could see, and I would be happy with the limited amount of NXT people coming up, because you remember 2016, like the women's division, particularly NXT, got absolutely gutted in that draft.
Yeah, they did.
I think who else? I can see making like a major move. Alpha Academy, I think, go stay on Raw because they got the Gable feud over the IC title. I really don't know with some of these people.
There's far too many for us to go and talk about all night on Central. People need a chance to take it in themselves.
Yeah, that is, like I said, the big question to give you there, and I'll be back next week with David Hockney. He and I will be here talking about the fallout from the draft. We'll be previewing Backlash in France and any other major stories that come out. But yeah, if you're going to hear me sometime, you really figure what the fuck's going on, who I think's going where in this draft. But let us know at the Suplex Retreat community page and our Facebook page and our social medias when we post the big question. But something we need to announce before we go, I think we're going to announce before, maybe we never got a chance, there was so much going on. ESSR is starting its own Hall of Fame. Yes, that's right. We have the ESSR Hall of Fame. So we have, I think it was an idea of David Campbell, the idea to honour particular performance, one male, one female. We have, yeah, I've been every year going forward, we have one male every year, one female. And we say not only just honouring a great performer, but also somebody who holds a special place in the hearts of the people here at ESSR. So I'm here to announce that the first female inductee into the ESSR Hall of Fame is Trish Stratus. Of course it is. It's organised by David Campbell. And the women's side of it was more hotly contested. There was one point where it seemed like we were up, we could go in. But overall, I think we all had to say, thank you, Trish, an inductor. And when we saw the nominees for the male side, we all knew it could only be one man. The first male inductee into the ESSR Hall of Fame is the world's largest love machine. Your king and mine, King Mabel Viscera, is in the Hall of Fame. Dick Guy Kiernan wanted to make a speech, but it was the trimmed down version was 18 pages, front and back.
I mean, we could have an absolute special just on Gary doing an acceptance speech for Big Viz, but instead of listening to that acceptance speech, I would just say, please, go back and listen to the special that ESSR done on Viscera for Christmas a few years back.
What a pro, ladies and gentlemen. What a pro. What a pro. Making all those plugs. So there you go. That is ESSR. That's been ESSR Central. Let us know, like I said, when we post a big question on our social media platforms at Suplex Retreat, who do you think is going where in the draft this coming Friday and Monday, and whatever happens, me and Dale Totney will be here next week to talk all about it and preview Backlash. Be sure to keep up with us on Essential every week. We're trying to keep it on a Thursday in terms of release going forward. Also, our monthly future show, stay tuned for when they're going to be coming out and what the main topic each month is going to be on our social medias, and to keep up with whenever Ethan West drops an episode. An episode came out where we talked Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, and looked ahead to May and the lineup of the best of the Super Juniors. And we're going to be back next month to talk Wrestling Done Tagger and hopefully get a bit of a preview of the blocks of the Super Juniors. And John Moxley's time as IWGP champion, his first couple of defenses. And it's your side of life every Saturday, obviously. All in the back catalogue, each YouTube page, where we get your podcasts, because like, rating, review, your chosen platform, previews, reviews, all the news, as Ross likes to say. Yeah, Grant, thank you for stepping in on a Wednesday evening to help me out with this one.
That's not a problem. Happy to help. God help you next week with who you've got.
I mean, he's usually one of the more available people, and you know, he's not bit odd, so we'll only spend the first 15 minutes talking about his holiday. But
the Vietnam special.
You weren't there, man. You weren't there. But until next time, I have been your temporary host, Scott McLeod. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hello, I am David Campbell, the tribal chief here when it comes to feature shows at Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet. And I just want to remind you that coming up is the Bloodline Profile Show. We will be releasing this the week of WrestleMania. It's the biggest feature show that this podcast has ever done. Every one of our contributors will be involved in this feature show, telling you the story of Roman Reigns, the Usos, Solo Sikoa, The Rock, the entire Bloodline, since Roman Reigns became the Tribal Chief, leading us right up until this year's WrestleMania. Will Cody Rhodes finish the story? Well, we'll tell you the story so far here at Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.